Ladies and gentlemen, this is another edition of the MSP Initiative, MSP Talk. It is April 11th. We are well into Q2. Did you know that? Are you paying attention? Hopefully everybody's hitting their numbers out there. Probably not. We're going to get through the housekeeping like we normally do at the beginning of every one of these sessions, and then we'll get into the good stuff. So here we go. MSPinitiative.com. This is, you know, pretty much what we do here. So you're going to see this very session being recorded. It will be uploaded to our podcatchers and YouTube and the sessions tab of the MSPinitiative.com website. So follow, share, like, comment. We appreciate it. We have our educational event coming up next week in Nashville, or Nash Vegas, some people like to say. So April 17th and 18th in Nashville. We have a ton of MSPs, hopefully like the people that are listening to this session, who are going to be on panels. Those are the beginning part of the days at this two-day event. And then we have industry experts who are doing at least two-hour workshops with you, right? Like, we want to stop doing death by PowerPoint. We want you to actually walk away with something actionable. So instead of the idea that you should look into something, we're talking about actually the steps required to do something. That being said, you can see the schedule is listed April 17th and 18th on the Community Minds tab of MSPinitiative.com. Check it out. Best part about this event, as an MSP, it costs you absolutely nothing to register. There is no $3.99, $4.99, $9.99 fee. So you can click on here, register for Nashville, and I'll take you to a page where you can just register. You do have to get there. I appreciate that there's time out of the office and like a little bit of travel probably for some of you, but we're hoping that this is like a straight up educational event that you can actually benefit from, and not like, you know, breakout sessions where I'm trying to sell you something. I'm going to sell you education, and then you decide if that education works for you. So there it is, MSP Community Minds. Then we get into probably what we're more famous for here at MSP Initiative, our MSP community block parties, after parties, nighttime parties, party parties. So two of them coming up, one at both in the same week, interestingly enough. One will be, it is the week of June 9th, so that's the Sunday, right, that week. We have PAX 8 Beyond in Denver, so we'll be doing a block party with on the 10th, which is the second night of the event. And then we will be doing a block party with the DattoCon Kaseya event in Dublin. So I guess it depends on which side of the ocean you're coming from. But we will be doing two parties on the same week, and man, we just love we love the party with you. So definitely click on these, register ahead of time. Costs absolutely nothing as an MSP to join us. So again, like, we're just giving you a bunch of free stuff. Take advantage. And we will, we'll be looking forward to seeing you guys out at those two events. We have some MSP industry offers from people who have thrown out some deals. If you can take advantage of them, super. And lastly is our industry calendar that we spend a ton of time on trying to consolidate all the things that we know about going on in the sandbox. So if you really want to be on the road all week, every month, you can do it. I don't know if you're going to make any money while you're out and about, but plenty of events for you to go to. So that is the housekeeping, MSPinitiative.com. So today, our special guest, and for the first time ever on the show, Victor Lopez from a company called FlexPoint. How are you doing today, Victor?
Good, George. How are you? How's it going?
Yeah, you know, like we're kind of chatting right before we jumped on. Yes, I'm definitely from Philadelphia. There's no question about it.
You don't No doubt in everyone's mind. Yeah, exactly. WrestleMania
was in Philadelphia. For people who aren't, you know, watching, you know, WWE, you know, in their
recent one was?
Yes.
Shut up, really? Oh, yeah, I didn't know.
Last weekend. So yeah. It was like a couple hundred thousand people coming through Philadelphia. Like, it's their Super Bowl, right? It's the professional wrestling Super Bowl. So it was good. It was nice to see everybody out and about. I got a chance to go into, you know, my building, the Philadelphia Eagles home stadium, and see it in a slightly different way, in a different format. And I grew up in the, you know, Rock, Stone Cold, you know.
I know. I was going to say, I think I vividly remember the first wrestling match I ever watched. It was like 1994 on TV. And then, but it really kind of tapered off probably in like the early 2000s. So it's actually news to me that you know, WrestleMania is still going. So
the largest ever, the most people ever, the most viewers ever, the most social media posts.
That's incredible. That's incredible. When you think about like other sports, right? Like I'm a huge baseball fan, and like people always talk about baseball as being like a dying sport, like only like old people or like, you know, people our age like baseball. But it's like, how did wrestling stay relevant with like, you know, especially in like the cell phone, like internet age?
I'll tell you what, The Rock came back. That's my guy. And like, even though he was off doing movies forever and ever, like, you know, I think I saw a post online where it was like, when I see The Rock, I just see Maui from Moana, the Disney movie. I don't see the pro wrestler. I still see the pro wrestler. It was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I feel quasi bad because one of the nights of WrestleMania, like, it was kind of colder. And if you didn't have layers, and like, as people who go to Eagles games all year long, like, or during the city season, we're ready for
Oh,
that.
it's outdoors, right? So
Yeah,
it's
it's a
outdoors.
different stadium. So I think like one night they had like 72,500, the next night they had like 72,800, and then they also had
72,000?
SmackDown Raw. Yes.
That's a
So they also
huge
had
turnout.
SmackDown on Raw beginning and after. So when you add them together, it's pretty crazy. But just cool to see the backyard highlighted on TV. So,
I bet.
I missed the second night. I flew to Denver to scope out some venues for our block party that's up here.
I feel like anytime I open up LinkedIn, I see like George is going somewhere. George or Alec is going somewhere on a map, somewhere far.
You know, as I've said to many people, right? It's the benefits of traveling. There's many. We can talk about all the cool stories, but for people who do it on a regular basis, and if you're not mentally in the right place, it can also wear on you too, right? So there's a good and a bad to all things, but don't worry, we love to be out and about. Even ask Jen in the background. We set her places too. She loves it, especially
No,
when
I
she gets
bet. I
stopped in
mean,
airports.
I'm you know, I mean, I'm on at a show probably at least once a month myself. So, not as bad as probably you guys, but like, yeah, definitely. But I mean, there's no better way, right? Like, there's no better way to like, I tell this to anyone, like, what better way to like see your people and like who you're trying to serve than like at a show where you can like actually talk to them, right? Like physical thing. It's just, it's like
100%.
it's almost like a you know, different thing now, being able to see people face to face and like talk to them.
And a good thing, to be totally honest.
For sure.
So anyway, Victor, for people who have never met you before, don't know your story, I always ask anyone net new onto the show, like, hey, just kind of tell us your journey, right? Like, you started somewhere, you made it to, you know, into MSPIT land. Like, what did that look like?
No, it's actually I mean, for most, right, it's probably a long and winding road to get to Magic Land, the IT channel. But for me, it was a little odd and interesting. So I actually started my career as a lawyer. So I went to
Oh,
law school. So fun
you
fact.
pay all your loans off?
I recently I did. So yeah, I actually went to law school. You know, it's one of those things, you go to college and you're like, I don't really know what I want to do. So I majored in philosophy. So as you can imagine, all the jobs available to people who major in philosophy, right? And so logical step for me was like, I'm gonna, exactly. Keep counting. There's not that many. Starbucks barista, I think, was number one on the list at the time. No one
Wow.
knows the baristas out there, right?
Oh, by the way, let me pause for all you, since a lot of people know that we travel. I had forwarded my colleague, Mr. Sanders, a reel this morning. If you are a Delta person and you're also a Starbucks frequenter, I'm sure Jen already has this, so done. You can link your account, so every time you go to Starbucks, you get Delta Rewards points.
Oh, no way. Oh, that's good to
Oh,
know.
so there you go. I had to give that freebie out there for all of you travelers. Go
Well,
ahead,
for
Victor.
everyone knows. So anyway, so I went to law school, and so I started my career as an attorney, doing primarily private equity M&A. So
Wow.
that was fun. I did that. I like to tell people I was in law school for more time than I was practicing law. So as you can imagine, it was a fun experience. But from there, actually transitioned over into finance. So I spent close to 6 years at a place called Blue Owl Capital, which is $150 billion investment fund. So we did ton of different things, but primarily invested in small and middle market businesses. So across the board, not just MSPs, but actually a ton of software vendors that serve MSPs. So ConnectWise, for example. And so I did that for a good while. And actually myself and my co-founder, Sam, who I met there, we spent a lot of time just, you know, understanding the MSP space. It was actually a lot of how we made our original relationships in the space. Got to meet people, you know, like Adam Sluskin, who, you know, been at ConnectWise for a very long time. And so over time, you started to, when you're in that role, you start to identify areas, you know, gaps in the market, areas where something isn't currently solving a problem, right?
Right.
And so for us, what we were looking at the time was, when you look at an MSP, when you look at an IT service company, right? Generally speaking, I'm using generalities here. Generally speaking, those are started by people that are extremely, extremely good at providing IT services. So technical people, right? Really good at either being in-house IT or working at another MSP. Agreed. When they go into starting an MSP, and you've lived this journey, George, so tell me if I'm wrong here. But when they go into starting an MSP, right, like oftentimes, right, especially the ones that are successful, it's like they sort of stumble into this business, right? It's like, oh, I was out here to like help people with their IT and, you know, sort of do this thing that I'm really good at. And all of a sudden, you fall into, well, now I'm running a business. Now I'm running a business. And now, you know, I realize all the challenges that come with running a business, and especially, you know, a service-based people business, right? And so for us, we saw, you know, a huge gap in tools and software to help these business owners, these accidental business owners in a lot of ways, help run their businesses. And so the first thing that we sort of identified was, well, there's payments, right? There's traditional accounts receivable. How do you receive your payments? How do you get paid? Making sure you actually get paid. You know, we talk about this all the time. Like, cash flow is the lifeblood, the oxygen of any business, right? And then on top of that, we also realize that there's this, you know, interesting thing in the MSP space where so many MSPs are in the business of providing credit to their clients. And so we thought, wow, that's really interesting. You know, you have all these thousands and thousands of mini banks.
I don't know if that's formally providing credit. I think they just turn into it.
I think you probably realize the sarcasm there, but so obviously not intentionally. So we set out to build a solution that essentially helps MSPs run their business primarily through automating their accounts receivable from billing, invoicing, payment, and also very importantly, helping them not be a bank. So you'll hear me talk about that a lot, but no longer be a credit provider, be a, you know, IT service provider.
Okay. Let me go backwards for a second, because we're going to get into, you know, FlexPoint and what you guys do. So you sat in a very interesting chair that a lot of people on the MSP side of the aisle just, I mean, imagine the stories in the comments and the Reddit threads on this topic, right? VC, PE guys. And a lot of people don't like you. I'm not trying to point you, you know, just general industry, okay? Don't take it personally. A lot of people don't like those guys. A lot of people think that they're kind of like they're forcing change in a negative way, right? To the program, right? To the system, to the sandbox. From a vendor standpoint, they feel like once that transaction, that event occurs, like innovation stops and you know, like things just slow down and maybe like access to the resources they had start to disappear. Mm-hmm. From an MSP perspective, we're seeing, I forget how many there are, let's say 20 to 25 recognizable platform MSPs have been invested in by the same group of people, you know, same type of investor who are like literally rolling up MSPs, right? As much as they can.
Right.
Yep. So, and they don't like that. You know, like a lot of people don't like it. I'm sure like the people who get a check out of it probably do. Somebody's making any money out of this. But that being said, like you know, there, I guess the point I'm trying to make is from somebody that sat on the money man side, right? On the investor side. I'm curious how you saw, how you see the world, right? Through your glasses. Yeah. Right? I'm curious, like some of the decision-making that's made, we speculate, right? How did you decide that this was a good investment? And what is your 100-day plan post-acquisition to get what you need out of it versus right. what's been happening? So like, if you were to like, give me a big picture, right? Like from your trip.
Yeah. So I'll break it down into two parts, right? So like first, I'll talk a little bit about, I think the first part you mentioned, which I think is like very top of mind for most people. It's not just MSP, right? It's like how private equity is affecting all our lives, right? Like I was telling my wife this the other day, is like, you know, I was looking for a brand of deodorant, right? Just something like a brand of deodorant. And she's like, oh, why don't you buy Tom's of Maine, right? It's this like crunchy granola brand. And then little did you know, it's owned by some like big conglomerate, right? You thought it's just like, so eventually, right, you unwrap everything and everything is either, you know, made in China or owned by a private equity firm, right? so talking about that point, but so focusing on that part of it, and then I'll get to the second part of your question. But, you know, I think there's always two sides to everything. Nothing's ever black and white, right? So I think the private equity, and just to be clear, I'm not here to sort of defend it or anything that it's done, right? So I just give you my perspective and my experience. I think part of the success, a big contribution to the success of this country, everything that we do here, is because we are driven by innovation, right? So, and in order to innovate, oftentimes you need capital, right? And I think one of the big positives that has come out of the industry is, you know, that capital to drive innovation. So I think that's definitely something that people tend to overlook. And at the same time, the other part to it is like, who are investors in private equity firms, right? So it's not you and I, right? Or maybe it is, George. It's definitely not me. But it's primarily pension plans, state pension plans, right? Like all the people, public works, right? You look at like the state of Pennsylvania or the state of New Jersey or state, like some of the largest investors in private equity funds.
Wow. And I don't think people know that, to be honest.
I think it's a common misconception. This is all public. You can look it up. Like, I think it's called PSERS, like the Pennsylvania State Employee Retirement Fund, is one of the largest private equity investors, right? And why do they do it? They do it to fund the pension plans for like the firefighters, the nurses, everyone else. So there's that whole side of it, right? It's like this uncomfortable relationship of between the blue collar, the, you know, the state employees who have their pensions with these funds that require, you know, some level of return to be able to support that. So I think putting all that aside, I think part of why we at FlexPoint saw an opportunity was because, frankly, we saw from the inside what it looks like to, especially on the vendor side, the ramifications and what that looks like when, you know, these vendors are bought by large private equity firms. And so everyone has, right, like every MSP owner will probably tell you, like, my goal is to one day sell this business and make a lot of money for me and my family. That's just being an entrepreneur, right? Like, that's just the reality of it. And so I think that's part of the challenge. It's this uncomfortable challenge and this uncomfortable dynamic between, yes, everyone, we all are striving for this opportunity, this exit where, you know, we're all, you know, live the entrepreneurial dream, but at the same time, we're all, you know, talking about the outcome. What does that mean for everyone else? I mean, I think that's a challenge. I mean, I think for us, we at FlexPoint specifically, we think of it as an opportunity. Frankly, we continuously innovate. We listen to our partners. We make the changes that you request, which when, you know, you're a much larger company and you have private equity owners, let's just be honest, like the focus is something else, right? It's not so much how can you deliver the best product to your customers. It's how can you deliver the best product that's extremely profitable. So So yeah, so I'll get off my soapbox there, but just to maybe hit on the second part of your question. I mean, I think it focusing on the MSP space, right? And I think what's happened in the last 5 years, right? And there's so many more intelligent people that can talk about this than I can, but I think what's happened in the last 5 years is you just have so much capital, and they don't know what to do with it, right? Like, they being the investment funds, the private equity firms. And so they're all chasing this special MSP that the reality of it, it's probably like less than 10% of the total market of what an MSP is, right? So it has to be of a certain size, doing certain EBITDA, has to be like, you know, certain types of clients, et cetera. And so I think what that's done is, if you talk to almost any MSP, right? Like, even an MSP that's just getting started, moving from break fix to managed service, everyone's focused on like, well, how can I get my business to fit into that mold of, you know, the type of business that a private equity wants to grow? So like, everyone's talking about like EBITDA, when I think you should probably be talking about, well, like, do you actually have managed service clients? Is your model managed service? Is it break fix, right? And so I think what's happened is the upstream effect. You have all this capital that's trying to find this very limited number of MSPs that fit this mold, has then, you know, had a sizable impact on the whole market in a lot of good ways, right? Because it's a good thing that people now care about their margins. It's a good thing that people care about their EBITDA and, you know, some of these other operational aspects, and part of what, you know, we try to help people with as well. But the reality is, you know, it's very, very early days in that. So, I mean, you talked about some of these platforms, but some of these platforms have only existed for, you know, less than 5 years. So I don't think we've seen, right, the true outcomes there, or what the true reality would be, sort of post-acquisition of those.
Yeah. Well, one thing's for sure. Every deal is a little bit different. I've talked to a lot of people who have gone through buy or sell side of something, right? Mm-hmm. And then I was actually talking to an MSP yesterday who, you know, was, you know, asking me things about valuation and how do you come to the proper valuation? I'm like, a lot of it is correctly categorizing your revenue, right? Like, is it, you know, like, maybe times have changed, right? Because the market always changes up and down every year. But SaaS companies were usually valued differently than a professional services company, right? Like, is it still true in your mind that a SaaS company is valued more on growth, top line recurring revenue, and churn percentage generally, mm-hmm. than the bottom line of an MSP's calculation, which is more EBITDA? Is that still generally true, or has it been more grayed out?
I think it depends. So I think it depends. And I'll tell you kind of how we thought about things and sort of what I think is pretty common these days. So if you have a software company that's growing 200, 300, 400% year over year, the focus is 100% going to be on revenue, top line revenue. And the reason for that, right, is the growth rate, right? Because the balance, and you'll hear this from most financial type investors, the balance is between investing in growth versus investing in profitability, right? So if you spend a ton of money into sales and marketing, you should be growing very rapidly. Right. Now, if you scale back the money that you're spending on sales and marketing, your growth rate is probably going to go down, but your profitability is probably going to go up, right? Yeah. So it's that balance of at what stage does it make sense? So when you look at most like later stage software companies, when they go public, right, they're generating over $100 million of revenue, but their growth rate generally tends to come down into like the regular people atmosphere, right, sub 100%. And so that's always going to be the case, right? Like, investors, anyone is always going to pay an additional amount for that growth, right? I think the more common scenario is valuation based on profitability multiples, in this case, EBITDA. And yeah. So I think there was a period of time where it was very hot. And I think some investors probably looked at MSPs and were like, all right, they're they have, you know, X amount of revenue. I'm going to value them at 8 to 10 times that multiple. I would say that's probably not that common. And was the best, probably don't really exist anymore. Probably had some bad bets there. So I think what is much more common is a multiple of EBITDA, right? So it's a multiple of this metric that essentially just measures profitability and cash flow. For most service-based businesses and most businesses generally, it doesn't matter if they're software or an MSP, right? Like that's going to be the metric that they're measured on. And then things come into play like, okay, how much of that revenue is recurring? How much of it is tied to a managed service contract? How much of it is low margin, you know, hardware reselling, et cetera?
Got it. So regardless of SaaS company or MSP, the starting point is the same as what you're saying, right? That they're going to work backwards.
So yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't, the key difference though is like at those early stages, right? Like you might be an MSP, let's say in your first year, and you're doing 500K, right? 500K, you have a good first year, that's you're just getting started. And you grow 200%, right? Like the next year you're doing, you know, much more than that. I don't think most, and again, I could be wrong, I'm not the expert in this. Most likely you're not going to get a revenue multiple, right? Even though you grow, because you went from $500,000 to $2 million, right? But if you're a software company that goes from $1 million to $10 million of revenue and you're growing, right? You're growing at that rapid pace, you're probably going to get a multiple based on revenue.
Okay. There it is, guys. You heard it from somebody that was behind the glass on the other side. So, you know your numbers so that you understand what you're working towards. The last thing I want to do, and we've heard this on this show, right? You work for 20, 30 years. In your head, you think you know what's going on. You get to the point where you're ready to do something. You find out, not good. You're not
good. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a process. I mean, I think in general, from my experience, every successful MSP that has had an exit has spent at least 2 to 3 years kind of preparing for that. And so not just from like an operational standpoint, but from like, you know, making sure your employees understand that that's part of your plan, right? Like, I think the worst case scenario is, you know, the MSP owner that sells the business for, you know, this awesome number, and there's a huge earnout tied to it. And then the next day, all the employees, including, you know, the GM and all the important key people are like, well, you didn't tell us this, I quit. Right. And they're off and go somewhere else. And now that business is, because it's a people business at the end of the day, right? Service-based business. Sure. So that becomes a challenge. And I think that's a challenge for a lot of MSPs, especially MSPs that are in that sort of range of, you know, 1 to 10 million. It's just, do you have a team, an executive team that surrounds you so that, you know, if you go on the street, get hit by a taxi, the business still runs, right? And it still runs without very little interruption.
Yep. Jen's going to take over when I disappear. she's like, what did he just say? let's flip over into FlexPoint. So like, let's look at the market for a second, right? You came into a market with a handful of options. Two of the most notable one have been acquired by the platform software companies, mm-hmm. right? You know, BNG Connect Booster, who got acquired by the Kaseya Group. And then you had YSync out of Australia that was acquired by ConnectWise.
Yep.
And then there's still, you know, like the gateway services that every bank offers, right? You know, like authorize.net and you know, the credit card merchant processing and ACH, blah, yada, yada, yada. And then there's companies out there that are a little bit more ubiquitous, right? Like a bill.com or something like that, right? They're out there. And then there's good old fashioned QuickBooks merchant services, which I'm surprised still is a thing, but apparently it is. So, you know, so when you lay those options out there, let's say that there was like five options other than good old fashioned checks and the check scanner machine or the mail, right? So as all things go, and you've been on the other side of this, when people get gobbled up and the terms change, people look elsewhere. Fine. Right. So like other, you know, so based on those options, you came in and you said, hey, I'm going to create a sixth option. There's probably more, but like I'm going to create a sixth lane. And what is the value that we're going to provide in this lane that, you know, differently?
So I think the best way to kind of describe this, right, it's where we are today versus where we'll be a year from now, right? So I think it's a very accurate comparison to say, you know, and I think frankly the Connect boosters and the Wise Pays of the world have done a great job, right? Like they've done a great service to the market. In the last 10 years, they've provided something that, I don't know, 5-7 years ago, most people didn't either know that they needed or didn't have a solution to solve that problem, right?
100% so true. Yep.
Totally, totally transparent there that I think they've done a tremendous job. And so when we think about ourselves and why we started FlexPoint, right, and what we think the differentiating value proposition really is like, yes, today we can essentially do everything that, you know, a Connect booster or a WisePay provides with a little bit more. But again, going back to what you were saying, right, like those businesses have reached what I would say a peak, right? Like they are now part of a large organization. They're tied to those businesses. And so for us, what we're doing today is just the beginning, right? And so really for us, it goes back to what I was talking about earlier and why, you know, I left this career in finance to start FlexPoint. For us, it's really building a suite of financial tools for an MSP. So payments is part of it. It's a big part of it, right? But even from the beginning, right? Like we're not just doing payments. We're also helping with short-term financing, helping MSPs not be a bank. And so from there, we have a lot of other incredible things that we're working on, constantly developing, innovating. So I think the value proposition today is very clear. I think most people understand the need for accounts receivable software, payment software, making sure it works within your existing workflow, so it integrates into your PSA and your accounting software. So, I mean, we can talk about the authorized.nets of the world, but I think, you know, if you're using that, you probably have some other issues that you need to solve for first.
Well, I saw a post of a guy yesterday, I forget where, one of the groups on one of the platforms, Facebook, whatever. Yeah. And he said that authorized.net, this so far this year, has held up $100,000 of transactions that they had to go and get released, basically, right? Like they transacted the customer, came out of their account and went into limbo.
Yeah.
And they had to fight to get the money released. And it's like, wait a minute, why is this so difficult?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. We had a partner who joined FlexPoint after using PayPal, and they were using PayPal, and they were paying an obscene amount of money using PayPal just for the benefit of using PayPal. So the way kind of to get back to your question, just kind of summarize there is, yes, today our solution is very much focused on providing payments, automating your payments, automating the working capital side of it. That's just where we are today. And we're a fairly new business. You know, we've been around for 2 years. So I think what we've accomplished in those 2 years, right, we have hundreds of MSP partners at this point now, is only the beginning. So I think when you look at where we're going and, you know, what we're planning on doing in a year from now.
Paint the picture for can you share?
Yeah, I'll share what I can. Otherwise, someone on my engineering team is gonna get really mad at me. But so we think of it as a full cycle, right? So there's the accounts receivable side, which is what we're solving for now. But in terms of running your business as an MSP, we focus on a few other key areas. So reporting, being able to have accurate data around things like DSO. Accounts receivable aging, but also forecasting. So taking it a step further, like how do you take that information and be able to forecast it in an efficient way so that, you know, we talk about this very often, but you have a lot of people, a lot of businesses, not just MSPs, small businesses generally, that live by the bank statement, right? Like you don't know that you're running out of money until you see the bank statement. That should never be the case, right? You should have reporting, you should be able to forecast, you should know what your cash flow coming in, going out looks like. So that's an area that we think is, you know, very, very important to focus on. But then as we think further, right, then there's the accounts payable side of things. How do you handle the other side of sort of the payment workflows? and then beyond that into a full suite of tools. Like, even think about, I mean, now we're getting a little bit into the future, but even think about how most people deal with things like payroll, right? So it's like, how do you get your text time, right? And all the time and information that they're putting into the PSA, how do you get that accurately into your payroll system so that you know how everything is, you know, works together? So I think there's a lot of opportunity, and frankly, we don't go too far into the planning stages, because a lot of what we do comes from our partners, right? So having those conversations. So when we hear about, like, here's the new challenge, this is the new thing that I need to focus on, these are the things that I'm worried about, like, that's what's going to drive us. Not so much like, hey, we have this whiteboard with all these grand ideas of all the things. I mean, you know, paper ideas are good, but it's like the people that are actually using and, you know, providing the feedback are the ones that are driving where we're going.
Yeah. Okay. So right now, today, you're another option for bank and credit card transactions to automate into the PSA and accounting system so that, like, you're not waiting on your money, right? Cash mm-hmm. is king. There was another part to that you said was like the equipment financing or something like that. Let's talk about that in a second. But on the future, your goal is to, like, not just live at the end of the conversation, which is, am I getting paid? You want to streamline into the entire life cycle of a transaction, right?
Like, streamline the full back office. So think of us as the back office solution for the MSP.
Okay. All right. So, you know, probably, you know, reporting, visibility, and automated some stuff, but there's probably some quoting in there or something. And I don't know. I'm not going to put your words in your mouth, but, like, yeah. I'm just thinking about what it takes to get from
a cross those bridges when we get there. But for now.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I may have stepped on something. Okay. So, so talk to me about the equipment finance part then. Is that part of your story?
So I'll make it clear. It's not equipment finance. So we do partner with leasing companies to do traditional leasing. So we don't do leasing. So like hardware leasing. What we focus on is the working capital. So less than a year. So like, let's say you have a client that has, let's say it's a new client, $10,000 onboarding fee, right? Generally speaking, as part of the sales process, that's a hard conversation to have, right? It's like, hey, you're gonna sign this managed service contract, and on top of this, we're gonna charge you $10,000 up front to be able to scope everything out, make sure everything's done. So what our solution provides is you take that $10,000 invoice and you break it up into 6 monthly payments. So you pay that over 6 months, pay that over 3 months, pay that over 12 months without it affecting the MSP's cash flow. So MSP still gets paid up front. We're the one that fronts the money. We're the ones on the hook if the client doesn't pay. And so that's just one use case. So think of it as really working capital financing. So anything from net 30 up to 12 months, doesn't have to be hardware related. Couple other use cases. So I'll give you an example of a partner of ours. So we had a partner out in Indiana, Patrick Kemp. I'm sure he'd love it if I mentioned him. But so Patrick and his partner were, you know, they were growing MSP, and they were looking to go up market, right? So like they were going from like mostly SMB to more up market, mid market enterprise clients. So they had these opportunities to work with a regional franchise, so coffee shop franchise. So across the board, you know, hundreds of locations across the Midwest. But the challenge there was because larger, more mid-market enterprise style client, they required terms. So they were bidding for the preferred partner to install security cameras, all the infrastructure, every single location. And so, you know, you're a growing MSP, you're getting started, you know, been around for a little bit, but you don't have access to, you know, $10 million line of credit, right? They partnered with us. And so what we have enabled them to do is every new franchise can now finance that project through us. So now those security camera installations, those franchise location buildouts, can all be financed through FlexPoint without it affecting our partner's cash flow. And so they grew revenue just to give you some numbers, they grew revenue over the course of 8 months, 500%. Utilizing. Wow. Yeah. So we think of it as one, yes, we help you get paid. We automate the accounts receivable side of things, but we can also help you sell more, increase your client's wallet share, right? Like increase your client's purchasing power so they can do more with you, buy more from you, without, you know, you obviously taking on the credit risk.
Wow. That's interesting. That's different. That's new.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would say that's a great case study, by the way. I'm sure a lot of people would love to do that in their own businesses.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, to your point, a lot of people have decided, hey, I can't play over here because I can't hold the 60-day terms. I can't, float the money. That disrupts how the business runs, right? Based on the smaller guys. So to your point, I guess they could go and try and go to traditional banking and see how far their line, they can get with a line of credit or that kind of thing. And I'm sure, the people are giving out money, I'm sure at a crazy high percentage, but they're there, but up to a certain point, right? Like an unsecured line of credit, like you're probably not getting six figures without some sort of skin in the game, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had it. It's funny. We had a partner describe coming to us. We had a partner describe what it felt like to them trying to get a line of credit from a bank. And the way he described it was like, I walked in there and I felt like I was naked, like I had no clothes on because they asked me for, my last 3 years, financial statements, my mother's maiden name, everything. And on top of that, the personal guarantee, right? So
there it is, the personal guarantee.
And so, whereas with FlexPoint, it's, it's all in one place, it's all automated, seamless. We describe it as really a consumer-like experience, right? So if you look at things that are now like ubiquitous, like Klarna or like Affirm, you go on the website, you click and you pay over 3 months. That's the type of experience we're trying to deliver. So that it becomes something that, is that value add to both our partners and their clients.
That's pretty cool. I love that story. So that is a tool, one that many people don't have today, right? In order to make things go.
That goes back to what I was telling you. It's like, even today, right? Like we are a new company. We are 2 years old. And even today, our goal when we launched was, yes, we provide you with the accounts receivable automation, the payment processing, but we wanted to provide something more out the gate. And so that's the something more that we're doing now. But like I said before, we got a lot ahead of us.
Yeah. Well, I, as a guy that's been in the chair of trying to build new stuff, I feel the pain.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes a lot. It's like building a building. Anytime somebody gave you a date, the building will be open, but it's like, no, it won't.
Right.
This is gonna be a
right.
problem.
Especially in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's gonna take longer. It's gonna be weather. It's gonna be delayed. Permit. The inspector didn't come. Who knows, right? At the end of the day, building stuff takes time. Building stuff well takes time. And then, I think one of the cool parts is getting feedback from your partners, your customers, so that you can ultimately build the right stuff. To your point, right?
Yeah.
I mentioned this on the last episode. I was on my way back from Australia a few weeks back, and I was watching the BlackBerry movie. I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
And they were they're talking about how U.S. Robotics put this modem order in, and then they were it was a modem order that was never going to be actually seen, right? They and actually it kind of hits your point, right? They had this $15 million contract that they haven't made a single payment on.
Right.
And they're running out of money. And so they called up US Robotics and were like, hey, what's going on? And they're like, oh, you didn't know we canceled that?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, what?
Yeah.
It turns out they were actually after, effectively the other thing that these guys were building, which was what turned out to be BlackBerry. Right.
Right.
And needless to say, they did not, capitulate and just hand over the model, the idea of their cell phone over to US Robotics. But that being said, if you remember the movie, had the guy that they brought in as the CEO not gone to Verizon and make the pitch of his life,
right?
Get Verizon to basically fund them. Probably go out of business.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, and that's the thing. They had to have them fund them. Otherwise, there's no way they could have done that. But yeah, it's, I mean, that's a challenge. I mean, I think it's a common challenge. We saw that on the other end, right? Like, that's part of why we did this. It's like anytime you try to go up market, even if like today, right? Like, the majority of your clients are small businesses. Even if you try to go like mid market, it's a whole different animal, right? Like, you have different organization, you have different stakeholders. Like, even just getting paid is a whole different process, right? Like, there's a whole another level. And so, like, if you don't have the right tools in place and the right plan in place to like be able to do that, it's really challenging. So you often
100%.
find people not being able to take that next step because, you know, it's just not, they don't have a plan in place.
Yeah, or they take a shot at it and they find out that 80% of their time is all on client because they can't. So it just takes a lot of energy to try and deal with somebody who's not the normal blueprint for you.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's another part of making sure you're I mean, we do this all on our end too, right? We see this all the time, like making sure your solution is well fitting for the type of client. And so sometimes you have to turn away clients that, you know, seem like a good client, but at the end of the day would probably suck up a ton of resources.
100%. So that's cool. So you're a couple years in the flex point. You know, sounds like you probably started with some cash, right, to get this thing going. So you use all the skills that you learned in your VCPE days to like start a business, which is cool, by the way. Like, I think that's one of the, you know, it's I call it the actual American dream, right? You can do whatever you want, right? I mean,
It's the
it's
actual
successful.
American dream. Both my parents, not to get too into the weeds here, but both my parents immigrants, right? So I'm first generation. So there you go. It's you know, it's truly the American dream.
It is. And as somebody who's, come through that lens, right? Like, these people came, with nothing in their pocket, and they were just like, hey, we're just going to work really hard and get the white picket fence and like live, right? Nicely. There's more if you want it. A lot of people don't want it, but there's, it is out there. There's more.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
that's
true.
cool.
I will say, you know, and I tell my kids this even now, like, you know, hard work, it might not be what gets you there, but it's definitely not what's going to keep you from getting there. Yeah, so if you work hard and that's a constant, there's
I like that line. I like that line. Yeah, no, if anything,
trademark it.
you go for it. We have it recorded. This is good.
Yeah.
Hard work kind of gets you through the hard time, I think, right? Like, that's the thing that like holds you over until you get to the magic that you hope to happen, right? So
Yeah.
a lot of people don't put in the time, right? They, and there's oodles and oodles of stories where people gave up too soon. And all of a sudden, like, something happened to somebody in a similar position, or something, the next person in line, hit it big, right? Like, here's a good
Right.
one. McDonald's,
Yeah.
right? Like that whole movie with Ray Kroc coming
Right.
up
Yeah.
and like, yeah,
It's a good
like
movie. Yeah.
it was great. The founder, right? And it was like, those guys had a great idea and they got squeezed by a guy who was just hungry.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and there's a, I tell this to people as well. It's like there's also a blind self-confidence, right? It's like you take a look at me, right? It's like who most people that I went to law school with, right? Like, it's like, oh, the guy ended up running a business. Like, if you put yourself in those shoes, some might call it naive, right? Others might call it blind confidence, but you also have to have that part of it, right? It's like the hard work, but also like the belief that if you keep working hard, you will be successful.
I agree. What your lawyer career wasn't like Suits?
Yeah, it was exactly like I'm just joking. I've never actually watched Suits. I get a lot of
You've never watched Suits?
No. I've never watched Suits. I tried actually, now it's on Netflix, like the whole like whatever 14 seasons is on Netflix
Like
now.
nine, but yeah.
And my wife is also a lawyer, so we've met in law school. And so I tried to convince her, let's watch Suits, and she's like, I can't watch that. It's like there's too many things, right? It's like imagine watching a show, you're an MSP and you watch a show about being an MSP, right? Like you'll be like, well, no one uses that. That's not how that works. So it's not the same.
Well, one it was very entertaining. So if you do break down, and if you
I've heard, yeah, yeah I've heard, yeah.
then you may have to come back to it. It's very good. And sounds like you from like what, New York, New Jersey? I didn't catch where
I live in New York. I grew up in California. So
okay. Well, you live in New York, so Suits is perfect for you because it's supposed to be based out of New York
I
City.
Did work in New York City, right? Like that, I did work at a law firm in New York City. Yes.
Yeah.
So
82 hour weeks, and you know, for no money.
I would say 80 hours on the low end. Yes.
Wow. So you just had a cot in your place, and in your cube, and you just stayed there.
You know, it's funny, and this is getting probably too in the weeds again, but there would be multiple weeks where you just work 90 to 100 hours a week. Wow. And it's like, you know, if the people think about it, especially, I don't know, I mean, for anyone who's out there looking to become a corporate lawyer, let's talk, let's make sure you understand what that means. But it's not stimulating work, right? It's not sexy work. You're generally what you're doing,
buying people, negotiating deals, getting out of
law. I was a junior lawyer, right? Like when you get to several years into it, by now, yeah, sure, I'd probably be doing the exciting stuff now, but you know, that'd be 15 years later. But yeah, in the early days, you're just grinding, you're doing a lot of documents, you're doing a lot of review, you're looking at a lot of things that, you know, you wonder, wow, how did this business get acquired for $1 billion? But you know, ultimately it's not your decision.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, if I didn't go into technology, Victor, I would have tried to be a lawyer. I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't know if I would have been a good one or a bad one. But maybe I grew up watching too many lawyer shows. I don't know.
Yeah. I think we all did, right? I think it's a classic. You don't know what you're doing with your life, and so you heard that. You know, for me, it was like, again, coming back from the immigrants background, it's like, well, I know that lawyers are a good profession, right? I'm not going to be a doctor or an accountant, not blood or, you know, numbers.
But don't forget, there's an engineer, doctor, lawyer, engineer. Didn't you remember?
Engineer, that was going to be too hard for me, probably.
Yeah, I got it. Well, one thing's for sure, I've had a few more traffic tickets than the average guy or girl out there, but I drove a lot, so you know, law of averages, in my opinion. I digress, but I have fought many a traffic ticket, and I would say I have a pretty good batting average.
Yeah Wow. All right, that's it. As you know, one of the things is, if you show up, right, that's you increase your chances 50% that you're gonna win the traffic.
Except in Pennsylvania, this is a good story on the way out of here. But like Pennsylvania, they get paid overtime to show up to court. So by the way, they're incentivized to show up.
Okay.
Yeah. For two, we're one of the few states where the local police can't use like radar and speed guns. They got to use like
really?
The lights on the road and a stopwatch kind of thing.
Uh huh.
Like I yeah, it's silly. That's,
I mean,
it's
really. You know, my lawyer brain all of a sudden, ooh, there's a lot of loopholes there.
You would think, right? But they're like, oh, we got, you know, we the law says we have to calibrate our equipment every so many days, and here's the certification. Da, da, da. So I was like, okay, so I literally fought one of these where the lines on the road were like the police department went to Home Depot and like put them on themselves, right? Nobody actually like surveyed these lines.
Right.
And then like the road is on a curve, so the lane one distance and the lane two distance aren't the same. And then like at the time, I'd have to go back and look now, and, you know, and as I was reading through as a normal guy, not from law school, it was like, hey, the law said the actual measurement of point A and point B have to be plus or minus 1%, right? Like, so if you measured this with like your car or some other instrument, and then they go to actually measure it, you know, normally, what's the calculation difference? It's got to be within 1%, right?
Right. Okay. Right.
So I had one where I was coming down this two-lane highway in each direction, and I got clocked by a guy who said he was clocking me in his rear view mirror, or like his side mirror, like the one where it says objects may appear closer than, like, legitimately. He says, like, writing, I clocked you in my mirror going 82.2 miles per hour, making a right-hand turn.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm not a, you know, like, a scientist, but I'm pretty sure my Volkswagen doesn't turn right at 82.2 miles per hour. Right. I was like, and the road's backed up. There's traffic bumper to bumper. Did I fly over these cars? Like, I didn't know I had a DeLorean with wheels that turn sideways. So anyway, long story short, just if anything, just a funny story on the way out the door. I went to Home Depot. I got a measuring wheel. I measured these lines.
Oh
Like,
my God.
Totally unsafe on the side of the
Oh my
road.
God.
And I was like, there's like 13 feet difference between what you say the measurement is and what the actual measurement is. And like, that's more than 1%, right? So I go to court and they're like, well, your measuring wheel isn't a certified approved measuring. Like, you didn't calibrate. I'm like, okay. So in Pennsylvania, we're one of, I think, three states where you can get a de novo trial just for free, right? You're just like, hey, I'm appealing
de
it.
novo, that's a good that's a good legal world.
And I call up PennDOT and I ask for the traffic engineer for like my area, and I pay that person to come and survey the road, like for real, for real. And he got the same measurement I got, created a report, showed up to court to testify.
Oh my God. How much was the fine? If can I ask you, how much was the fine?
It was a 5-point license suspension, 90 days, departmental hearing. Like, maybe you have to go back depending on the
yeah,
hearing.
It was a big one.
Like,
yeah. Okay.
Right.
It was
like,
a big
you basically,
one.
You can't move, right?
Yeah. Okay. All
so I
right.
was like, so, like, as a guy who is driving on some years, like 25,000 miles a year, my worst year, like 38,000 miles a year, I drove. Like, it was crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
Just here in the Northeast.
Yeah.
And I was like, I need to drive to do what I do. And so I fought it. And, Jen's like, these traffic violations started to trigger me. Jen, you gotta do it on time. Don't be late. Anyway, so long story short, I ended up doing well in that case. And so did 6 months of my fellow Pennsylvania drivers who also got their cases reversed. So
that's great. Oh, it became a precedent so other people could like point to it.
Well, it was the same officer who wrote.
We'll look it up. George Byrne, D.C. versus the state.
444 tickets written by one guy on one time in 6 months. So, like, you tell me.
Yeah. Wow. That's congratulations. I think, I mean, it's an accomplishment there.
Wow. I just thought you'd find it funny as a guy who,
No, I mean, we'd be on this for several hours and probably not be able to do anything if we started getting into stories about, you know, anytime I couldn't use some of my, you know, legal skills into making sure you know, I'm not getting screwed over by somebody.
Yeah. Well, there's more of those stories, but I don't want to trigger Jen anymore. Victor, where do people find more about FlexPoint? If they want to talk to somebody, if they want to see something, they're an MSP, where do they go?
Yeah, absolutely. So just website. So getflexpoint.com. And anyone, feel free to reach out to me. My email is just victor@getflexpoint.com.
Awesome. Well, I can't wait to trade more legal stories with you. It sounds like you have
yeah,
to do.
Yeah.
Guys,
none of this was legal advice.
It was just my
disclaimer.
Personal experience. It's just personal experience. Anyway, although Brad Gross is probably laughing at me somewhere.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, this session was recorded, guys. We're going to post it on all the podcasters, YouTube, MSPinitiative.com under sessions. MSP Community Wise next week in Nashville. We got PAX 8 Beyond. We're doing a MSP block party there. We got DattoCon Dublin. We're doing an MSP block party there. Register ahead of time. Yes, we'll be in the schedule on the conference apps, all that jazz, but like, don't, you know, have to be one of those people that have to do it at the door. I digress. Victor, thank you very much. I'm sure I'm going to see you on the
thank
road,
you.
It sounds like.
I'm sure. And, I'll see you at PAX 8. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
If not earlier.
It's going to be a great time. Well, that or in an airport somewhere for sure. It sounds like.
Absolutely. All right.
All right, guys. Catch you on the next one.
Thank you. Care. Bye.